Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined alongside Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling. And we have a special guest in studio today, former Pitt quarterback and USC quarterback, Max Brown. Max, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
We're going to be talking about, obviously, USC's game tomorrow against Washington State.
Holy cow.
I know. Yes. Pretty crazy. A Friday game. Night. It's a quick turnaround for USC. Maybe a good thing if they're coming off two losses. Maybe get that taste out of your mouth. Have a quick game. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be previewing that game. And, of course, answering your questions. I believe we are triple casting right now on YouTube, Periscope, and Facebook Live.
Nice. So, all three at once. We got three people here sitting at the desk.
Just a lot going
on. We had new theme music. If you listen, so for the millennials
cheesy.
Out there,
a little cheesy.
Okay, if you don't know Foreigner, I grew up with Foreigner. Double Vision is a famous song. When we came up with the name Tunnel Vision, thanks to Gate Call from the Peristyle, that song popped in my head. And so I want to thank Sarah Trevino. So she's with Trevino Media. She's actually a Thornton Music School grad. And they do stuff for advertising, for movies, for TV shows and stuff. She produced that Tunnel Vision. They found someone to sing. It sounds exactly like it. Played next to Double Vision. So thanks to Sarah Trevino for that one. I don't know, probably before your time.
Ryan's really excited.
We're appealing to the older crowd with that theme music.
I'm the one old guy in the room. Come on.
Apparently so. So we will be answering your questions. We'll be monitoring them, so make sure you put those in. We'll be getting to those a little bit later. But first off, Max, I mean, you do some cool things on YouTube. You break down the team. So you've been watching this. What is your general assessment about this USC team so far?
My general assessment is I'm scratching my head just like everyone else in terms of why can't the offense score points? What's the deal? For me, I think a lot of it's just the physicality, right? Blocking on the edge, that's one thing that stuck out to me in the Texas game, but not too much of an identity. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are there, but it kind of changes week to week in terms of how the play calling's going about. Identity is something they're missing, but it'll be interesting with the week four matchup tomorrow how they do.
Yeah, we talked to August Cedric Ware after the game, and he said one of the things that are missing, they had a lazy and slow practice leading up to the game, but they also said they're lacking a offensive leader. And that's something you were on the team for USC. You were a captain. How do you become an offensive leader? How does that happen in the locker room?
Yeah, that comes through, work ethic and then just being there a long time. I think that's one thing you're kind of putting aside when you start a true freshman quarterback is that you're looking for a leader somewhere else in terms of receivers or offensive line. In 2016, that's something that we had a great group of guys that were the leaders, older guys that had been through a lot of coaching changes, so we had seen a lot. And that's something that with this offense and this team moving forward, someone's got to step up. When you're complaining about practice, to me, that's less of a coach's deal and more of a, hey, players, let's keep people accountable. So there's something to think about there in terms of who's to blame for comments like that. But it's a group effort. They know that, and they'll get it straightened out.
Interesting.
So for you guys who don't know, Max, Keely introduced him as the former Pitt quarterback.
She said
we're good. Yeah, I was there 4 years.
But I've had the pleasure of knowing Max for many years, probably going back to the 2011, 2012, when he was a five-star quarterback, the number one rated quarterback in the country. I think we might have been with rivals at the time we were doing that, but
yeah.
He was so all the recruiting junkies out there, he was pretty much a recruiting junkie too. So our two big events that we usually go cover at the opening in Beaverton, Oregon, and then at the Army All-American Bowl. I remember me and Gerard be talking with you, and he'd come up to me, he's like, okay, who are we getting now?
You were involved
in the recruit.
I needed you guys. Yeah, we only had 15 scholarships. We had to make sure everyone was perfect. Yeah, that's funny.
It was funny. I remember talking to you. It wasn't a great memory for you guys. It was in San Antonio for the Army All-American Bowl. Just happened to be going on. I think you guys played for the West. A West practice was going on. During the which bowl was that?
The Sun Bowl.
Where there was kind
good
of
good memory. Yeah.
So and you're I remember you guys are a bunch of the commits on the field. We're getting updates of Georgia Tech's winning whatever it was, and you guys are like, what's going on here? Yeah. That was a very strange time too.
That led to an ugly month of recruiting. You mean you talk about Jalen Ramsey?
Oh yeah, he was a stud.
Eddie Vanderdoes and Michael Thomas. The kind of woulda, coulda, shoulda guys for what could have been for us.
Yeah, it was the number one ranked recruiting class at the time, and. Coming up for that season, that was a really strange. But you've had, seriously. I mean, your career was very interesting, getting recruited by Lane Kiffin and being there for his firing. Yeah. And then, Clay Helton was the...
Kiffin, Orgeron.
Oh, Orgeron was
Helton for the bowl game against Fresno State, then Sark, then back to Helton. So The whirlwind. Yeah, that was wild. The gauntlet. Yeah.
You transferred out after you graduated. You still had five head coaches.
Yeah. That's 5 years, five head coaches. But yeah.
Some quarterbacks get like five different offensive coordinators. You had five head coaches. So
yeah, it's a lot, but hey, make it what you can.
So we saw practice this week, USC trying to bounce back. Shotgun, what did you see from the team overall as far as practicing goes?
One of the things you noticed most was that the coaches were very animated this week. You know, Tim Drevno, especially with the scout team, he was throwing defensive linemen back and forth. No, get in this, get over. And so they were very animated. You saw there's seemed more intensity, more flavor to it, I guess. You know, they were really attacking the practice more than we've seen in the past, which I think is a good thing. Which, you know, you're coming off a week where, you know, where Akasetuwera says it was a lazy practice and Tyler Vaughn says we can't do this anymore. And you saw the coaches were, the offensive coaches in particular, were really going after the guys and really attacking those practices, which I thought was a good thing. How did the players respond to it? See, it was very similar practices. They didn't go full pads. Kind of tough. We talked about this before off the air, but it's kind of tough to go with those full pad practices knowing that you just came off a game where you played 80-something plays on defense. Your defense lineman with Brandon Peely basically being suspended the first half for missing a meeting. You know, without him, those defense linemen played a ton of plays in that game. Then you have a short week, and you're going to play an up-tempo team that wants to run a ton of plays again. So kind of hard to go straight to full practices with one less day of recovery early in the week and trying to get into it. So I thought that that them not going full pads was not a big issue to me. I didn't think that was something that they had to do. It would have been nice to see it just because, you know, maybe it was even if they flipped the practices and still had that full pad practice on Tuesday and just switched something up, because it seems like there needs to be some kind of change in the practice routine, because it's just become that. It's just become a routine. It isn't something where something changes. You know, I like when coaches, when they see something's going wrong, change something up and make something different. Make it a different drill, make it whatever. You know, even if you have to switch the order of the drills, whatever it may be, just so you get out of that, you know, okay, well, this is what we do now, and then this is what we do. And it just seems like a chore rather than you're going to practice and you're trying to get better.
I wanted to ask you about the full pad stuff. So it's a hot topic on the boards. People are like, oh, they're soft, they're not doing this, blah, blah, blah. No pads November, they hate it, all that kind of stuff. Going back to, you know, you've had all different head coaches, were all the practices kind of similar? And then the second part would be, what's the difference? Maybe it's a little different for you as a quarterback in full pads. You're basically wearing the you know, but is it? Do you think it's different for defensive linemen and offensive linemen, full pads days versus shells days?
Yeah, I think your first question, for all the head coaches, they're all pretty much the same in terms of a Monday or Sunday walkthrough, then Tuesday full pads, Wednesday shells, Thursday is just helmets. That's pretty much the case. You might get another day of shells, but by and large, it's pretty much the same for all the head coaches. I think to your second point about the mindset-wise, I think for offense and defensive linemen, it's night and day different. And that's
really?
Why when you walk out on the field, if you stand by the gate, like I know you guys do, the guys that are talking about the full pads are the O and D linemen. To quarterbacks and receivers, it's just kind of whatever. You're not getting hit. But for O and D linemen, like that's the mindset for the practice. If I'm full pads, I'm gearing up. We're full contact. The intensity is probably just a beat higher. Versus if you're in shells, it's just different. You might have the same exact script of plays, but the approach to it's different. So I think there's something to be said about, hey, if I am wearing knee pads, as small as those things are, if I'm wearing knee pads, it could make a big difference in the approach for players in terms of the practice.
Some of the reasons, I guess, if you know, guys they're hurt or they didn't get a lot of rest, do you see the fact like, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't do full pads, or do you think, you know, it's not really that big? Like, what's the risk reward there?
And that's the trade-off. Yeah, exactly. If you're getting worn down, then it's maybe we should go should go shells. And my first couple years at SC, when our numbers were down, you almost had no shot, no choice, right? Like you had to go shells, because if you went full pads and you had a Leonard Williams go down, the team's screwed because you don't have the D lineman depth. Versus now, SC has that luxury, right? They don't have that's not the thing they can say in terms of, oh, we don't have the depth. No, they have the depth, and so maybe pushing for full pads is what they need.
And you talk about how it's different for the offense, defense, lineman. You look at the stats here, and USC's currently ranked 109th in rushing defense and 116th in the country out of 129 teams in rushing offense. So if both teams are in the lower 10%, then, like, I don't know for you as a player, like, if a coach just changes something, whether, I mean, we talked about it last year when Chris Hawkins said he went to Helton and said, hey, we need music before the Arizona State game. They come to the Arizona State game, blow Arizona State's doors off. And you're like, wow, what happened? And he says, well, we made this one little change. How much can a change affect, you know, a team when you're kind of used to that routine? If something is just completely different, whether it's, you know, a celebrity speaker or whatever it may be, Pete Carroll style, or if it's just changing something up in that regard.
I think you're spot on, but then like the flip side of that is every head coach says, oh, we gotta be who we are. Like, we can't change for who we're playing. Like, we gotta stick. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. So then there's that approach as well, which is the fine line and something that I know Coach Helton preaches in terms of, like, it doesn't matter the other team. We're gonna be who we are. So you're spot on. Like, the little switch, I think if it doesn't change your entire culture, wearing knee pads on a Wednesday is a little switch. Music's a little switch. So those type of things probably definitely help a team.
Max, you've been around this team, and you've been around Helton, and Helton has been very upbeat after losses just because, you know, he trusts his players, and I think that rubs some of the fans the wrong way. But you've seen Helton behind the scenes. What is he like when losses like this happen?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he gets the rap that he's like, I don't know, like, he doesn't have the discipline or like a pushover. That could not be farther from the truth. I mean, he'll get on guys. He'll let them know when they make a mistake. I'm sure he was that meeting the next day. He was very intense. I'm sure. I mean, you guys probably see that practice a little bit. Some of the like the yelling and hey, let's go. So that he does have a side to that. I saw those same post game interviews, and it does kind of rub me the wrong way in terms of like, we did just lose to Texas, so there probably should be a little bit more sense of urgency, but. He does have both sides. I think he does have a good grasp of when his team needs to get yelled at and kind of pushing the button, and when his team needs to get picked up. And but I saw those same interviews and was kind of thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Interesting. As far as sideline culture, what do you see from USC's sideline? I know I actually remember the Stanford game 2016. You were actually with the O-linemen a lot and talking to them about getting things going. We don't really see that a lot this year. How do you interpret how the sideline is kind of communicating and looking during the game?
Yeah, to your point about the QB and the offensive line, I think when you start a true freshman, that's almost a given, right? He's not going to be the guy that's going to rah-rah the offensive lineman, especially when you have a guy like Toa and Chris Brown, guys that have played tons of ball. But that's a battle with any college team you're on, is if guys aren't playing, are they locked into the game? And I think that's a big energy. I think KB's back, right, the strength coach, and he's big on the energy. And so I'm sure that helps, but that was an issue at Pitt, too, is if you're not playing, like, what's your energy like? And for me, that's crazy, right? You should always be upbeat, supporting your guys. But in terms of offensive QB dialogue, that's something that needs to be fixed. But that'll help with the more experience JT gets, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Should we, before we get questions and stuff coming
up? Yeah, we have a lot of questions.
You know, I'm sure a lot. But let everyone know kind of what you're doing now.
This fall I'm doing a YouTube channel. So if you're watching this on YouTube, just type in Max Brown and my channel. Every week I'm breaking down one Pac-12 game or bits and pieces from Pac-12 games and giving my insight on them, whether it's scheme things, play calling deals, whatever it may be, just kind of that next level football analysis. Kind of like Kobe's detail segment he did for the NBA playoffs along those lines. But check it out. Max Brown YouTube channel, one video every week, and it's good stuff. Pac-12 ball.
And you're working with Yogi Roth now with Pac-12 Network? Or?
Yep, working with Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. So watching every game, breaking every game down with him. So seeing every Pac-12 game and get a good grasp of every team in the conference. So that's been fun, and helping him do some marketing things and football things, and kind of wrapping it up together in my own YouTube series. So it's been fun.
You liking it so far? You like this?
Yeah, this different side of the house. Yeah. No more pads and
you can eat pizza and watching the guys working out.
Less pressure and scrutiny for sure. I guess shooting scrutiny probably comes, but been good.
So we actually have a lot of questions for you, and a lot of people giving you support and saying you're always a Trojan in their hearts. So, but we have a question from Zach who says, "How does USC practice compare to Pitt?"
It's very similar. That's probably not easy for SC fans to hear because the whole week's been about practice and what they got to improve, but it's been very similar. And like kind of said earlier, with the idea of Sunday, Monday walkthrough, whatever the coach decides, and then Tuesday full pads. And then I guess at Pitt we would do more Wednesday full pads, but it wasn't an always kind of thing. It was kind of depending on the week before and injuries and all that. But with that being said, Narduzzi wasn't afraid to go full pads on a Wednesday, which I guess is probably different from SC. But by and large, in terms of periods and structure and moving from special teams to offense to defense, it's been a pretty similar format.
Do they taper off at the end, like no pads November kind of thing, or?
A little bit, but not like with Orgeron. That was like the thing, right? You knew as a player, if you got to November, it was like, all right, I'm never putting on pads. Never putting on
really?
Pads, so pads
was,
during the week.
That
oh
was
yeah,
his thing. Okay.
That was his thing. But
well,
he was
you
like,
think of him as the super tough guy, you know?
Super tough. I guess when he was at SC, it was ultimate player coach mode, or yeah. So, but a little bit of taper off, but still like Narduzzi was a defensive guy in the trenches type of guy. It's like, hey, we gotta make sure we're hitting people in the mouth, and that comes with putting football pants on in November. So there was a little bit of that for sure.
Tarek wants to know, do you see yourself becoming a coach at any point?
We'll see. Initially, the answer is probably not. That lifestyle in terms of getting hired and fired and moving around seems a little crazy, but we'll see. As I mean, right now, not playing this fall, so as if I get more removed from the game, maybe I'll coach. I think I'd be good at it. I think I could do it. But right now, the commentating broadcasting side is at least what I'm striving for post-football.
Well, you had the shoulder injury, right? And then did your pro day and stuff? And
had the shoulder injury. It was the labrum in my right shoulder, so that's pretty tough for a thrower. So I did my pro day, but I was only able to throw like hitches and slants. And my goal at the time was just to show people, hey, I'm healthy and I'm getting along. But still trying to get it full strength. I'm coming up on a year, so it was a tough deal. But that's football for you.
Mm-hmm. This is probably a question for everyone. Don't want to put Max on the spot. Mm-hmm. Tarek says, if USC loses to Wazoo, will the calls for Helton's job be justified?
I mean, justified? I mean, it's okay. It's worse. I figured 1-2 was a realistic possibility just because of the tough schedule. It feels worse than I thought it would feel because of the nature of those losses. If it's you add a third one on, it's going to be a lot different than 2016. So for a guy that just signed an extension in February, I wouldn't have believed that this could be justified. But there's something that needs to change. We haven't seen a lot of it. So I don't know. Like, it's not my call to make it justified or not, but it's going to be real. I mean, I think it's real already, but yeah. 1-3 would be real.
I mean, and it's also it's Washington State, which is a team that was perennially at the bottom of the conference, and a team that you at USC fans think that they should beat every single time regardless. And so when you lose to them, it feels that much more impactful in that regard. It's not like you're losing to, to Stanford or to Oregon in the last 10 years or to Washington. It feels much different when you lose to Washington State versus another team like that.
That's crazy to me if you step back, though, and if they were to make a change after next week. You're talking about a guy who won a Rose Bowl 2 years ago and went to a BCS bowl game or whatever, like the major bowl games,
yeah.
New Year's bowl game last year. Like, that's absurd. When
when
you take a step back, which say what you want, but like that's wow. And what's that mean moving forward for the next head coach that comes in here? That's as short of a leash as you could ever ask for.
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't think they would do something after like on Saturday, but I think that would be
the start of it.
Yeah. Like, I think that would be after the season. I don't think they're going to do anything at all. I think it's a realistic possibility they would do something after the season. We don't know Lynn Swann. He's new. He's never hired or fired a football coach before. But yeah, hopefully I didn't make it come off as I think they would make a change this week. No, I think it would be at the end of the season or something like that. But you're right. I mean, the resume's there for like he did a lot better than you thought. And I think USC needed that. You were there. USC kind of needed the adult. I always say the adult in the room to come in. They needed a Clay Helton or someone to
and the consistency and all that. Yeah.
Just to get. I think he's brought USC back and did a lot of great things success wise in the first 2 years. But if you're looking for this is going to be you want this to be a playoff caliber team. I'm just not seeing that right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Tester Troy wants to know from Max, what do you think is the main problem that you're seeing with this team?
That is the magic question, right? I mean, I don't think it's one deal necessarily, but then when I think back and you go back to the root of the whole issue, and when is everything equal? And that's like recruiting. So what kind of kids is SC getting? And for me, SC is getting the number one recruiting class or a top recruiting class every single year. So then what's the issue? They have more talent than every single team they're playing. And for me, if you look at the type of kid that might go to a SC, a five-star kid that might go to SC versus the five-star kid that goes to Alabama, the mindset of that kid might be different in terms of the Alabama kid knows exactly what he's getting, right? He's going to Nick Saban. He's heard horror stories of like the weight room and all that versus that SC kid might fall in love with like the sunshine, the girls, like all that stuff, how nice Helton is. And I'm not saying that's how every kid is by no means at all. I mean, Cam Smith, Marvell Tell, Ajayne, Porter, all those, Toa, those guys would play at Alabama. It doesn't matter. But what I am saying is if you get two or three kids like that per recruiting class, and then that starts to add up, that becomes kind of a little cancer in the culture and who you are, and especially if you're relying on those kids to contribute for you. I think that's something that when I look back, like that might be in terms of like a culture issue in terms of like we talked about it. They're struggling at the point of attack, getting punched in the mouth up front, blocking on the edges. And so that's somewhere if I try to like, okay, how is this happening? That's something that kind of eats at my brain a little bit in terms of like you're having issues with some guys getting kicked out this past year. So like, what does that say culturally and about the guys you're getting? But by and large, 99% of the guys are great, but all it takes is one to kind of impact the culture of a team.
Interesting. Yeah. Chris wants to know, what are your thoughts on USC's offensive scheme?
I think it's fine. I really do. I think when I played at SC, I never was sitting there thinking, oh, I hate these calls or, oh, I hate these plays, which that was kind of a big concern for previous head coaches and play callers. I never had that sense. I will say it seems like they're switching their identity of who they are. I mean, I know Helton preaches, hey, we're going to go 50-50 run pass. Well, then when you go to Texas and that's not the case, like what's the deal? So I think identity-wise, they got to figure out something. But play calling, they're just switching off who's making mistakes from what I can see in terms of whether it's blocking scheme or assignment, whatever it is. I don't – play calling's what everyone says, right? Everyone on their couch is, oh, play calling. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but execution-wise, something's got to get shored up.
I know the coaches bring up execution all the time, but which is kind of putting it on the players that they didn't do it. And what was different about the Texas game that I liked is that T. Martin did some different things where the offensive line is not playing well. They're not playing well at all. That's just straight flat out. They're not playing well. So he did some things to try to alleviate pressure off of JT with some different screen passes and stuff, and still the offensive line wasn't getting blocks in that. But I liked some of the things that T. Martin did to that, the quick bubble screens mm-hmm. early in the game. He was trying to bring those defensive backs up so that USC could have those deep ball shots, which they hit a couple of them later. But just the fact that they weren't able to get, you know, some of the things where they had, we broke it down on our film, was that there was a screen pass early in the game to Stephen Carr, and you have four offensive linemen out in front with three defenders, and they don't block any of them.
Yeah,
you have four blockers to block three defenders, and you block zero defenders. It's hard as a play caller, too, if you're like, well, what can I call now if we're not going to block anybody regardless of the call? So, you know, I know no one on here wants to feel bad for T. Martin, but I feel bad a little bit when I see some of the calls. I'm like, oh, that would work if they do block it. We talked before about the fourth and one play, the toss sweep at the goal line. You know, the play before on third and goal, they tried to run it up the middle. They went under center. You know, everybody pretty much got their blocks. They didn't get in. So they tried something different. Texas, you know, has an extra defender in the box. Let's go outside with it. And you look at it, and if Tyler Petit and Eric Cromanhook get their blocks, they allow penetration. And then it puts it on Vi Malapai as a fullback who, you know, probably has not played that position much, to make a decision, do I try to take out this guy, this first threat, or do I continue going on my path, which is what he probably should have done, because it looked like Stephen Carr would have got outside of that anyway. And then you have one-on-one block on the outside and Stephen Carr racing to the pylon versus two defenders that he's already got a step on when he catches the ball. So some of the things you look at and you say, well, that looks good when you look back and you break it down, but you're like, well, you still have to block it. So it's kind of difficult for the play calling at the same time, I think.
Yeah. 100%. And we hear from some of the players that they're talented individuals, but they don't necessarily play together as a group. Is that something that's a mindset? Is that a practice thing? Or is that just an excuse that they're giving us?
Yeah, it could be all the above. Sure, I don't know. But to me, it's probably a mindset deal. Like that, like not playing together, like you're around each other every single day for a year. Like that shouldn't be an issue, but I don't know. I guess mindset, but I think that's people probably trying to find an answer for just put an answer on a question. I don't know if I have a great answer for that one.
In that sense, you were hearing questions from us after practice at USC. Yeah. As a player, how hard is it to come off the practice field and now you have people in your face asking you questions about things?
That's a great question, because that is probably the single one issue that's single one factor that's different from SC to Pitt, is that Pitt, there's no media watch. They watch warm-ups and like the fastball period, for what I'm sure they probably still do that, and then like that's it, and then they're off the field. So I was laughing. I was reading your tweets when you were tracking every QB's throw in fall camp. I was like, that would have never flown at Pitt. And there's something to be said about that, right? Because when players are having to play to make sure, like, you guys tweet about them. Like, there's something to be said, especially for younger guys. Like, oh, crap, they got on me for that. Or you guys don't really get on people, but I'm not getting the headlines that I thought I was going to when I was in high school. That can wear on people, younger guys, especially, I think, as you get older, you get used to it. But just a totally different in terms of media culture at from SC to Pitt that I saw that could impact players. I'm not sure.
Was that a hard thing to get used to, people tweeting about you and talking about you?
For me, it was one of those things. I knew what I was getting into when I came here. But then when, like, you're in a quarterback competition, and then my first year, like, when you're losing a quarterback competition, it's a lot easier said than done, like, having people tweet about you. So it's like, oh, it doesn't impact me. But inside, you're like, gosh dang it, like, I got to play better. So everyone back home sees these tweets a lot. So there's definitely an element of that. And I think I'd be willing to bet it wears on some guys more than others.
Yeah.
We have a Periscope question real quick. Antoninus, I think. I don't know. He says, do you still consider yourself a Trojan, USC Trojan?
Yes and no. I think school-wise, I do. I have a lot of great memories school-wise with friends and all that. But football is tough. There's definitely some scars there. Just that whole situation. So I think football-wise, I'm probably more so Pitt, to be honest, just because that's where I ended. But, I mean, I have 2 degrees from SC, so I always have that element. And girlfriend's from SC. My best friends are from SC. But it's kind of a yes and no deal. Yeah.
Interesting question.
We have a question from Jared who says, which game has a higher attendance this Friday, Modern Day IMG or USC Wazoo?
USC only because it has a bigger capacity.
Yeah. I wrote a piece, like, so you can check it out on uscfootball.com, Perfect Storm. Really, with the slow start, the Coliseum renovations going on because there's no parking over there, and being a Friday game, all of that combined, it's going to be lower. Like, the opener, 58,000, was the lowest opener total for attendance since 2001, Pete Carroll's first year. And there was in 2000, Hackett's Washington State game, they got 40,000 for that one. That was like 3 games before he was fired. I don't think it's going to get down that low, but there's a lot of factors that's really hard to get to a game on a Friday in LA at the Coliseum. And with all the construction, you can't just pull up and park because there's no more paid parking there. I kind of felt like this was going to be the perfect storm. So we'll see. I'm not sure what the attendance is going to be. But
what are you guys putting the number at? What's the over-under?
I got texted over-under 45, and I said under.
You said under 45?
Yeah. Okay. I'd be like 43, 44. Look, no parking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't even park on campus until 5, I think.
5:30. I was told 5 yesterday, and then Tim sent me an email 5:30 today.
And no the game's tailgating. The 7th, so no tailgating. So that you take away 2 things right there. You're basically saying everybody needs to take Metro. You can't come before the game and tailgate at all. You're just showing up for this game. People go to a game for the experience, for the entire day. You know, I have friends that go and tailgate at 6 a.m. for every Saturday game, regardless of what time the game is. The game is at 7:30 p.m. at USC, UCLA. Long day of drinking, yes. And sometimes you see guys taking naps and stuff. Yeah. But it's an experience. You're devoting your entire Saturday to that. Now it's like, hey, can you stop by after work? It's like a dinner date. It's not an experience anymore. It's a dinner date. And so you're going to have no parking. You're going to have no tailgating. And you're going to have no interest. Because it's Washington State for one, you know, it's not the marquee matchup that you want. Nobody really knows much about this Washington State team. They haven't played anybody, so there's not getting a lot of hype there. And you have a USC team that's coming off 2 losses over 10 points for the first time in what, since 2000 or something. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be, you know, accumulating a storm of not even, you know, 45,000 would be a blessing for them if they get that many.
One USC official I talked to was optimistically thinking they could get it to 50. So I think over-under of 45 is interesting. I would maybe put the over-under at like 47.5, I would say. Like
I just don't think people are going to come out.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Is the game on ESPN?
Yep.
ESPN, yeah. So it's also, it's, if it was on Pac-12 Network, then some people might want to come because you don't get the Pac-12 Network, but you can actually watch it. I don't know. We'll see.
Raphael says, who's the best wide receiver you've seen?
Oh, wow. Best wide receiver, probably Marquise Lee in terms of at SC. Marquise Lee in terms of in and out of breaks was something else. If he could have stayed healthy, and I think just towards the back end of his career, it's probably him.
Interesting.
Yeah. How does Amon-Ra St. Brown compare to some of those, that group of, you know, Nelson, Marquise, Robert Woods, you know, when you look at him and just seeing him coming in as a freshman, when you saw some of those guys early in your career, how does he kind of compare with them?
I think, I mean, granted, my Amon exposure is very limited compared to those guys, but his ball skills are right up there. I remember the back shoulder throw that JT threw at Stanford where he, like, comes back. Like, that is not, like, the best. I mean, he gave him a chance, but not the best throw, but incredible receiver play. So, ball skills-wise, he has to be right up there. The thing, like, when Keeley asked me, oh, the best receiver, when I think of Marquise, I think of just in and out of his breaks, how quick he was, the agility when he got the ball in his hands. That's something that I think is to be determined for me with Amon, because he hasn't got the ball in his hands as much. But ball skills, going up for the ball, I think that's something that we've seen these first three games he's great at. And I'm sure when it's all said and done, he'll be up with that list of names you just said.
As you talk about that throw at Stanford, basically JT just, you know, Amon Ross going towards his left, and JT just throws it behind him to his right because he sees there's an opening. And I feel like that's the connection those two guys have that's so unique, because he's like, okay, I'll throw it here, and if – he doesn't snap his head around, which is an incredible play.
Yeah.
If you've ever worn a helmet, it's very difficult just to snap your head around that quickly and find the ball and be, you know, cognizant of where it's going to be. But if he doesn't, then it's just an incomplete pass. And I feel like he gives Amon Ra that trust. It's like, okay, I'll just throw it in the area where there's nobody at. He'll go make the play and make me look good. And it's what he did there. And one of the things we pointed out when we were looking at the tape was that they brought him in on third downs, the first two drives just on third downs. And he converted almost every one of them.
Yeah, he had like four conversions, I think.
Yeah, in the first two drives. And basically, it was short stick routes and stuff, but it's 4 or 5 yards, and he's able to just do enough to get himself open in these little tight windows. But he does some things already as a freshman. They're very impressive with how he attacks the ball. You know, one of them was a stick route, and there was a linebacker coming at him and basically would have hit him and stopped him for it. But he uses his momentum and takes one step forward to catch the ball, and then he's able to kind of move off the tackle. A lot of things he does are impressive to me. And we saw more of that in that Texas game.
Mm-hmm. Albert has a couple of questions for you, Max. He says, what's the best part of your journey so far, and what's the biggest thing you learned about the college football landscape?
Oh, wow. Best part about the journey for me is probably the people you meet. It's kind of an overarching theme, but from everyone I got to meet that's impacting my life now, with football, outside of football, the friends, the teammates, that's probably the best part. And what was the second question?
What did you learn about the college football landscape?
College football landscape? Well, I think the East Coast bias thing's for real. being at Pitt and like staying up to watch some of the SC games, or my best bud plays for Washington State, I guess, tomorrow. But like those Pac-12 after dark games, those games are going to like 3 a.m.
back
at Pitt. So there's no way anyone's watching those.
Yeah.
And I think that dialogue is just true, and people on the East Coast hate it, or people SEC people hate it. But in terms of the landscape, I think it's spot on.
Yeah.
Got a Periscope one from Puck to Hawks. Does SC have too many options on offense, and does that hurt the flow of the offense?
I think that's a fantastic question, because I've actually thought that, and
really?
I think an element of that is yes, and it sounds crazy because you can never have like too many weapons, but what I will say is the line I always use to like my buddies is, if Michael Pittman was on like Colorado, he'd be the best receiver like on that team. Like, or I guess they have Chenault this year, but by and large, like he'd be a stud. But then he's kind of like an afterthought. We've talked about Amon Ra, Tyler Vaughns, like he's kind of like the afterthought, which is like crazy to me. And then when you talk about like in the slot, they're playing Sydney, Amon, and Velus. Like, those are all great players. But then by playing all three of them, not a single one gets in rhythm. Like, every time the ball is thrown to him, it's like, okay, that might be my one catch for, like, the game. Which is, like, a wild thought when you're talking about guys that are elite players.
Bit, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think, especially on those 50-50 balls, when they're, like, throwing it up, and if you're Tyler Vaughns and, oh, I missed that, like, that might be my one fit, like, ball that entire half. Which, there's something to be said about getting in rhythm, and I think that's the case with the running backs as well, is you have three great guys. They're all, like, worthy of playing, but if you're only getting a few snaps here and there, it's probably tough to kind of get in the flow of the game, which there's something to be said for that. I don't think that's the issue with the offense by no means, but I think there's something to be said about that question.
Mm-hmm. And Velus Jones, you talk about him, you know, he had probably his best game of his career. He played 14 snaps in the first quarter. He played 8 the rest of the game.
Wow.
It's interesting how they
But then it works both ways. So, like, for every snap he's playing, like, Amon's probably not. I don't know exactly. So, like,
that's part of it because you know, you're using basically Amon Ra on third downs in the first quarter, and he had one drive later in it. And they use kind of Amon both inside and outside, and that's part of it. But, you know, at some point, you like, do you not feel that hey, this guy's having a really good game. This is the hot hand. We should go with him. You know, he had his first deep ball catch. He made a couple of tougher catches underneath. I mean, that first ball that was thrown, you know, they picked up 17 yards, basically threw it through the hands of a defender jumping up in front of Velas, which is a very tough catch, and he makes the catch. You know, at some point, I think you got to go with a hot hand though in a game, right? When someone, you know, makes a couple plays, right?
Yeah, 100%. And then from the quarterback's perspective, if those receivers are only getting like their one play a quarter, if that play doesn't work, they're coming back to JT and they're getting on JT like, come on, man. And then that
my only play.
Yeah, exactly. And then that wears on a quarterback, especially a younger quarterback, and especially when we've talked about like leadership might not be as strong as it once was, whatever you want to say there. That's definitely the case in terms of if I'm open only one time a quarter, one time a game, I better get the ball. If that doesn't happen, that's tough for a receiver, yeah.
So would you prefer seeing kind of the Darius and Juju where those guys were playing 90-95% of the snaps?
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, but with that being said, I think – so Vaughns and Pittman, they're pretty much locking it down at the X and Z receiver. It's the slot position that I think is just intriguing. And I know from a quarterback's perspective, if one guy's a technician and a route runner, you'll probably have him down on third down or like – the routes that you really have to be specific with rather than some of just like the shallow routes where it's just get to an area. So I get there is strategy in terms of who brings what to the table, but it's interesting for sure.
Raymond wants to know, do you think USC is ready for this game? It seems like Washington State is smelling blood in the water. Mentally.
That's interesting because Mike Leach is a pirate guy. So yeah. Shark reference here.
This is a really interesting matchup to me because of the offseason. I mean, the horrible tragedy with Tyler Helinski, the suicide. Like, you don't know what the mentality of the team is going to be. Mike Leach flirted with the Tennessee job. It looked like he was going to get it. And they only brought, I think, four offensive starters back, five defensive starters. They lost five assistant coaches. There was a lot of turmoil in this offseason. Now, Shaka mentioned they haven't played anybody yet. I thought the road win at Wyoming, no more Josh Allen, but that was still pretty good. They were losing against FCS schools at home just a couple years ago. So I thought that was all right. They put up a lot of points against Eastern Washington. I mean, you probably know those programs well. 470 yards for Gardner Minshew. And I think, to me, Max, I'll get your thoughts on this. Their defensive front, they lose Alex Grinch, who goes to Ohio State. He's co-defensive coordinator there. But they bring in Tracy Clays, who was the former head coach at Minnesota, keeps the defense the same. A defense that gave USC troubles last year. It's not a big defense, but they're small and quick. And when you talk, Shotgun talks about the offensive line playing poorly, what looks to me they're playing poorly is just not picking up the right guys. It's not like they're getting beat physically. It's really about just picking up, you don't know where the blitz is coming from. You don't know where the rush is coming from. And I think Washington State does that really well. So I know they haven't played anyone, but I think this is going to be a real test for USC.
And there's something to be said about, like Shotgun mentioned, for when SC plays Wazoo, as an SC player, you're thinking, all right, this is a win right there. And you might not get up for these guys like Washington State. This is their championship right here, right? Probably a lot of LA-based guys or Southern California-based guys. They're trying to make a statement on national television Friday night. I think this is, SC's going to have to come out hot. I think the winner of the turnover battle, kind of like you talked about, sacks and mistakes, I think that'll decide the game.
And I pointed this out before the season, is that when I said I thought USC would be 3-2 out of the first five games, is that this is really tough because you've gone from, you beat up on UNLV, you have a tough physical matchup with Stanford where it's all multiple formations everywhere, you go to Texas, athletes, a little bit of spread, but not like you're going to see against Washington State. You come back on a short week, and you've got to basically prepare for an offense you haven't seen at all. And I think that's going to be difficult for the defense. I know we enjoy Keely and I enjoy the Clancy versus Mike Leach matchup because you see them both on the sidelines looking over and basically like, okay, what? And Leach's guy's
little
he's making plays, and Clancy's watching. Like, and last year, Clancy did some things where he put Matt Lopes in as a linebacker, actually, to use that, and Mike Leach immediately ran at Matt Lopes in that game. So you see the back and forth and the kind of the chess match of those two guys, which is fun to watch. But I think it's going to be tough for this defense to have to prepare for an offense that's so different from the other ones they saw in the first couple games.
On a short week, yeah.
Speaking of which, Daniel has a question for you, Shotgun. He says, the defense has given up a lot of big plays as well. Is Clancy's scheme no longer a fit for college football?
I think the difference is they're not getting to the to the passer. When they get pressure on the quarterback, then you know they don't have those times, and you're sending blitzes and stuff, but you have one-on-one matchups on the outside, and you're going to lose some one-on-one matchups. Whereas if you get the pressure on the quarterback and you have the 48 sacks they had last year, you don't give up as many plays. Even though last year they were giving up some big plays in the secondary. I think the secondary has been much better this year. But like even a couple of the first downs that the Texans was able to pick up, you saw Isaiah Langley like basically got tackled. His arm was inside of the catch on one of them, and the guy catches it for a first down. So coverage was really tight on that. And you saw Isaiah Langley got out jumped on a play where they had 10 guys on the field, but he's right there on the coverage. I think the coverage has been pretty good this year. I think you're just not getting to the quarterback and affecting him enough so far.
It's interesting, some of the numbers. I think Michael Castillo was tweeting these out, but USC's like on first and second down, some of the best defense in the nation. Third down, like averaging nearly 9 yards or a little over 9 yards to go, and still giving up a huge amount of which is weird, It's a really strange stat. I don't know the exact numbers in front of me, but something like that, where USC is doing really well on first and second down, gets a lot of third and longs, but not doing very well on the third and long.
And one of the things they're not doing that they did last year is batting some passes down. Uchenna was so good at that. He led the team in pass deflection. It was the first time a linebacker led the team in pass deflection since like 2000, I believe. And they've gotten two maybe this year, one or two. John Houston had one this past game. I think they've had one other. So in three games, you have a couple.
Our buddy Sean Cody, I think he tweeted that out. Like, that's one of his keys. Like, defenders get their hands up and try to bat some balls down because they haven't done that a lot.
And when you have the depth, that's something the motor should be running for all those guys getting in there, especially on third down, pass downs. That should be happening.
I know a guy like Marlon Tuipulotu is putting his hands up every time. And, you kind of wonder, is the ball going, right by their hands every time? And they're just not as lucky as they were last year?
Or is he just getting gassed mid pass rush? And,
Uchenna was really, really good at that.
He was special at that.
Matthew wants to know from Max, what's the main difference between a Pac-12 defense and an Alabama defense? Of course, you face Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama, I mean, I just remember the meetings leading up to that week. I remember Tyson Helton said this is like the best college defense I've ever seen ever. The standard there is just different. I mean, you got Alabama, it's every guy has NFL on his radar versus Pac-12. That's just not the case. But obviously, Alabama's the standard and everyone else, it's hard to match up with that. But I think in the Pac-12, obviously, it's a lot more pass-centered defenses. So you get a lot more nickel packages and defensive backs. But just up front seven for Alabama was probably more elite than the Pac-12, but that probably comes as a surprise to no one.
That first quarter, I think you took off and ran for a first down. Yeah. You got really excited. I think I asked you about that after practice. Yeah. I was
my buddies will still send the gif of that. So that is pump. They'll still send that in group chats.
That was a great play. Yeah.
So, not used to seeing that out of me, so it was funny. Yeah.
Paul wants to know what's going on with USC special teams. How does the punt game get more consistent?
Only a matter of time before that question.
I mean, I asked John Baxter about the punters, and oops. Sam Darnold just fell in the background. Yeah. Asked him about the punters. He said we expect those guys to do better. They have experience doing well. 2 years ago, Tilby was the punter on the Rose Bowl championship team. You had Reed Budrovich was good last year for them. So then I asked him, is it mental or is it physical? And he said, that's tough to say. He basically didn't have the answers for it. So I asked him, about how much time they spend and, not getting the results. He said, well, hell, we'll have to look at that. So he really did not have any answers after the game. I'm not sure. I think you were in on the...
Yeah, I did talk to John Baxter this week, and he didn't really have a lot of answers. Usually he's a little bit more snarky, and this time he was a little bit more humble and I don't know what's really going on. It's kind of a confidence thing. But Reed Budrovich says that Baxter gave him a lot of tips and helped him at least with the mental side of it. Baxter didn't really want to go into that. He said it's more of a player coach thing. So I don't know. I mean, Baxter's not usually the most informative, so we didn't get much from him. But
what you got to see USC practices and Pitt practices. We kind of harp on the amount of resources that USC puts into special teams, mm-hmm. where you have a dedicated special teams assistant coach. Seems like about a third of the practices are used on special teams. 5 scholarships are used on special teams. So there's a lot of resources. How would you compare what the resources at USC and Pitt?
I think I was part of 2 outlier programs in terms of special teams. At Pitt, they had a special teams guru guy as well. And Pitt was very good at special teams as a result. Oh, okay. So yeah, to your point of five special team scholarship players, that's great. Two punters, right?
With two punters, two kickers.
That's and Reed's one of my buddies, so I'm pumped he's on scholarship. But I think it has to be mental, right? It's not physical. If they've done it before, it can't be physical unless there's some injury we haven't heard about. So it's got to be mental. And to me, it's are these kids approaching it as, okay, if I shank this one punt, then I'm benched. And if that's the approach, then that's got to be tough, because then you start stressing and freaking about the little nuances. And then when you do shank one, it gets worse. And then it's just a little carousel for the punter. That's no good for no one. So that's where my head goes at with that. If you know you have two scholarship punters and they're approaching it like, oh, I just can't mess up, that's tough, but it shouldn't be happening.
How about time-wise, though? Like, at Pitt, they use a lot, like, how much time of practice?
It's very similar. Okay. Maybe not as much, but in terms of, like, meeting rooms, it was the same. I think Baxter's probably the standard for that in terms of how much time he's allocated. So it was close, but it's probably more at SC, which is no excuse considering the struggles they've had.
You look at it, though, it seemed like they took a little bit less time this week at practice. You
know, we charted it.
We were actually checking to see.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, that would never happen.
Yeah, exactly. But you look at it, and the punting has been bad. Seven punts of 30 yards or less, which is pretty awful. It was not good for a season. It's just awful for three games. But that's not the only thing. They've given up a fake punt. They missed a 53-yard field goal. That's whatever. They have a blocked field goal that turns the game around. Basically, I tweeted game over after that, because you knew the momentum that Texas had, and you could see on the sideline it was over at that point. Whereas if he makes that field goal, it's a one-score game, and suddenly you're back in it. You got a little bit of momentum. You get a defensive stop. You can go change things. So it's that, and there's been four penalties on special teams. There were several penalties last season. It's just we see it over and over, and it doesn't seem like there's any answers from anyone. I asked Clay, you know, is it time to make a change? I didn't necessarily say he had to be fired, but that something had to change on special teams. He said, no, John Baxter's one of the best in the country. Well, we're not seeing it.
Yeah.
If he's one of the best, you're giving him these resources. You're going to get five scholarships. You're going to spend as much time as you do in practice. There needs to be results, right?
Right.
And hey, every once in a while you get the Michael Pittman, you know, the punt where have him on the other side of the field and you fool the defense. You get that every once in a while. But when you're constantly having mistakes, like at some point, don't you have to say, all right, we're either not going to dedicate this time to special teams, either we're going to go for it more on fourth down, or whatever it may be, there has to be some kind of change, right?
Quarterback likes that.
You can't continue to do the same thing, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is the change, anytime they get in between the 40s, they're just going for it every time. That could be something interesting to track there, is if they're saying, hey, we know the punter might be our liability, we're just going to go for it all the time. And that'll be interesting to see moving forward.
And Clay even said that last year, that Chase had a hip or a groin injury later in the season, and they said that at some point you kind of had to make that decision. Like, we don't know if he can kick that long one, so we had to go for a little bit more on fourth down. So maybe that is something.
Especially if he's gone, or obviously torn ACL, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moving forward, you get inside – like get that 30-yard range, 35-yard range, or 30-yard line. Are they just going to start going for it more? We're going for seven instead of three. That'll be interesting.
Romero wants to know, if these trends of losses continue for USC, does that affect recruiting at all?
Like you kind of saw, like you saw that a little bit when you were getting recruited. Did that change your mind at
Mine
all?
Mine was probably one extreme, because it was 7-6. It works both ways, though, because if a team's struggling, then the pitch to the recruit is, hey, come in here and help us play right away. And that was kind of where my pitch was at the time, is, hey, we don't have an answer at the quarterback at the time. Come in here and win the job. And so that's how they sell it. So I don't think it affects recruiting. I think what does affect recruiting is if the rumors of if it gets to the point of coaching changes, or there's like major changes, I think that's where it probably affects a recruit. Or if the schools around USC start picking it up, if a Chip Kelly's UCLA and I can just go across the city and go to a different school, that might affect it. But by and large, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's different. A lot of fans look at it as like, oh, we're losing, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you're from a recruit, a prospect, you're looking at it from a completely different, you're looking at the depth chart. It's not about, oh, you lost to your rival and stuff. I mean, we've seen, you know, Manti Te'o, like Gerard loves telling the story, took his official visit to Notre Dame. They lose the Navy. They threw snowballs at all the players and stuff, and he ends up at Notre Dame. So he's really it's different. Your product. You're looking for your own school. It's not like a fan where like, oh, we lost this game, I'm really bummed about it and stuff.
100%.
You basically don't see as much of an impact with losing unless it's really, really bad. or if you have, you know, Sun Bowl, something that's really bad. But you do see a boost if you're really, really good.
Yeah.
You'll see more out-of-state recruits start looking, because then you get more national attention, so the guys aren't in your state. Your local recruiting usually stays pretty much the same, whereas your out-of-state becomes a little bit different.
Gerald, that's kind of a tough question. He says, looking back, is there anything you would have done differently during your time at USC?
No, not at all. Honestly, I think that's one thing that allows kind of like peace of mind now, is when you look back with the information I had with coaching changes and offensive coordinators and depth chart stuff. At the time, there's nothing, nothing I would have done different. May have handled a few like meetings differently in terms of like the questions you asked to try to get ahead of things. But that stuff, that's totally like living in hindsight a little bit. But by and large, nope, wouldn't change a thing.
Did you feel like it seemed like the whole 2016 was kind of crazy, the beginning of the season? I feel like USC was never doing a really good job of getting, you know, with Cody Kessler starting, getting you know, meaningful reps. It's like really just, it seemed to be really hard to do that. And then when you do finally get your chance, there's someone that's coming in. Like, they never have done that before. Like, your backup or was the one that was kind of coming in. It just seemed like it wasn't, I don't know, just the way they did it was differently with you guys and some of the other stuff.
Yeah, I think that's, I would echo the same points you said. I think a lot of like little factors, like little things that could have gone differently, of getting more game reps, or lucky enough for SC, like Kessler never got hurt. He literally, it was only one play in 3 years that like got hurt. And so that, like, that never happens in football usually. And so would it have been different if there was like a quarter of play where I had gone in and like whatever it may have been, or if the opening game wasn't the Stanfords and the Alabamas, or like whatever it may have been. Yeah, like a lot of little factors that added up to maybe not working out in my favor, but at the end of the day, that's life. Yeah.
Adora has a question. He said, the backup QBs don't have headphones when he looks at USC's sideline. He said, was that the case when, you know, Kessler and Sam were here? And how involved are the backups in kind of the coaching of the game? Thoughts, you know, how do those guys help out? And how much does it help maybe if you have an experienced guy to help you out?
Yeah, I think a lot of that's just on the backup quarterback himself. If you like being in the game and that's who you are, and you like knowing the play call and like having a role and playing the play in your mind, you can just go to the equipment guy and hopefully you can get just a like earpiece to an extent. Some head coaches, I forget how T. Martin is, but they don't want the backup quarterback like hearing what they're saying, because who knows what's said in those things. So there is an element of that. To your second point, I think when I backed up Cody the first year, I full-on did the signal. So what like Dane Stevens is doing now, that was my job. So I think people like kind of respected or like trusted me with that role. And then I think as I got older to my redshirt freshman and sophomore year, Kessler trusted my info. So he would come off the sideline, hey, what'd you see here? I don't know if that's the relationship with a Matt Fink, Jack Sears, and JT. So that's something that Kessler and I kind of had a little bit. He respected where I was coming from, and I liked it. I liked staying in the game. So by and large, I think it's up to the backup quarterbacks themselves.
Raphael has an interesting question. Obviously, USC had the three-man quarterback competition in fall camp, so you had that rotation happening. He wants to know, how long does it take a quarterback to develop good chemistry with his wide receivers?
I think it just depends. I mean, it could be as short as a week, because at the end of the day, I mean, it's you're throwing and catching, or it could be a whole year. I think the biggest thing for JT is he's going to get better with the more reps he sees, the more looks he sees. I think when I was breaking down the film, there's some mistakes he's making where his eyes just shouldn't even be in that area. So like there's some cover two things where like he's trying to fit in a hole shot where it shouldn't be, or he's missing a dig route on third down. So those type of reps, I think it's less being on the same page as the receiver and more so just getting used to college football and the different looks he can get. That'll help him. But I think it depends. Obviously, he has a good relationship with Amon-Ra, and other guys will follow suit. But at the end of the day, it's playing pitch and catch to an extent. It might take a week or a month, whatever it is. He'll be fine.
Anthony wants to know if you can speak on USC's strength and conditioning program a little bit. I know some people after the Cotton Bowl were a little down on conditioning. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's world class. Ivan's the best I've been around. Ivan and KB and Josh, Mark, those guys are the best in the biz. Because I've seen those tweets, I've seen that narrative. Couldn't be more false in terms of SC's lacking in that department. Those guys are world class, and I think all those guys were former head strength coaches at their own program. So the experience at SC in terms of what they're getting day in and day out, it's world class. But with that being said, the strength coaches can't decide like what people are putting in their bodies in terms of gaining weight and all that. So a lot of it's on the players and in terms of what they're getting out of it themselves.
How different was it USC to Pitt?
The biggest difference was just facility. So at Pitt, our weight room was smaller, so like the structure of workouts is a little bit different. You had to get a lot more circuit-based stuff to get guys moving, get the tempo up, versus at SC you have 30 Olympic lift squat racks. So you're able to really have guys hone in on one area. And so that's the benefit of having a John McKay Center. But in terms of instruction and teaching, both places were great. And I think, I mean, Ivan Lewis and his staff's definitely the gold standard.
Did you love the weight room? Were you a big weight room fan? Not really.
I was weightlifter of the year after my redshirt freshman. I don't know if that's your last.
Very cool.
Little skinny, little backup QB, but I did like it. I think genes-wise, I didn't know what maybe show as some of the other guys, but I was always in there trying to get some extra, do what you can to get better. Yeah.
You awesome. Mean like genes-wise, like Lynn Swan's tight jeans?
not jeans, yeah. Forgot about those. Oh, the Mike and Cheryl Brown jeans that they get.
What do you guys think is the biggest challenge for USC on Friday facing Wazoo?
I mean, I think just getting the offense rolling again, getting some confidence. I think JT Daniels came out of fall camp. There was a lot of confidence there. He's a young kid. Is that shaking a little bit? Well, you only scored 3 points and, you know, they looked really good in the first quarter and then not score for the rest of the game. So I think coming home, getting some confidence back and being able to put some points on the board. He has one touchdown pass all year. You know, get the tight ends involved, get everyone involved, get the offense clicking. And I think, you know, if he can do that, then I think USC will be fine.
100%. I think the turnover battle is crucial in terms of turnovers and big plays. Defensively, if they can get a couple, that's a spark for the offense. That'll get them in motion if they're getting a short field, that type of thing. And then big plays on offense. If they can get the big run like Stephen Carr had in the first quarter, those are huge for momentum-wise. And then the passes as well. If JT can hook up with his receivers, that'll be big for SC on Friday.
Yeah, just the offensive line. If the offensive line plays well, USC will do well. I've said this for the last 3 weeks, I think, now. It's like, if they shore up the offensive line, the season will be completely different. I mean, but is there any indication that they're going to? Not from what we've seen in the Texas game. I mean, we have to see it on the field. I mean, they can do whatever they want in practice, but until we see them in a game actually block people and be successful consistently, then we're going to think the same thing. The offensive line has to play better, and if they do, that'll give JT more time. It gives receivers more time to get open. I mean, I charted in the Stanford game. When he got pressured, it was between 2.2 and 2.3 seconds on average. That is super quick. That is giving you basically one read as a quarterback. Maybe you can get to a second read if both are short routes, but you're not having much time to go through your progression. And with a young quarterback, that's obviously what you want. You want to see them, you know, show you that they can go through a progression, but if they don't even have a chance to, you know, how are they able to progress as a quarterback as well?
We are reaching the end of our show, so if you want to get your questions in, final questions, then we will answer those, maybe rapid fire.
We'll rapid fire them quick.
Yeah, any Periscope or YouTube questions you guys want to get in?
Yeah, SJ Kick? I can't.
There's a lot of weird names. It's hard to
remember. He's on our message boards as well, but he or she. Max, what are the things you liked about Helton as a head coach, and what are the areas you want to see more from him?
In terms of the first question, he was as fun of a head coach to play for. I think guys really, in terms of like, I'm having fun playing football, that's definitely something he maxes out with guys. In terms of what I want to see more with, I don't know. I know that's not the answer people want to hear, but I'm not sure. And that's not me just trying to be politically correct. I think there's just that's one thing that SC fans are struggling with right now is I don't think there's one issue, or I guess offensive line play, but there isn't one issue where it's like, we got to shore this up, or he's got to make this change. Yes, there's full pads. Yes, there's whatever it may be. But for me, I didn't have any major complaints.
SJ1, Jake, I don't know. He says, how much does full contact practices affect O-line? How much is that for the O-line?
Yeah, I think it's huge. But it works both ways. We were talking about this. There's trade-offs. So it probably ups their physicality and their mindset and their grittiness, but I think it also comes with potential injuries and banged up and not being as fresh on a Friday or Saturday. So that's the head coach's job is to toe that line a little bit and see what's best for his team. And that's obviously the decision Coach Helton has for this week and weeks moving forward.
And that's obviously something that people complained about too, because you've had Chuma miss a practice or Austin Jackson this week for sickness, and people are complaining about guys missing a single practice and saying, well, if they don't practice, they can't play. Well, if you go more physical and have more physical practices, more than likely you're going to have more guys miss. So you got to find where you're going to stand on that line as far as that goes.
Michael wants to know, if you got a call from the CFL, would you answer?
I'd answer it, yes, but then I have to a tough decision. I haven't I'm not sure if I'm in love with the idea of playing in Canada, because obviously there's life after football, but there is like the AAF that's starting up. It's that new league. I don't know how much you guys know about that, but I am eyeing that. It's more in the States, so that could be fun as well.
Mm-hmm. Score predictions. Everyone wants to know what you think is going to happen tomorrow.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the spread in this one, USC's favored by 3.5, last I checked.
Which is basically means it's a push, and USC being the home team.
Yeah,
but USC's 3-14-1 against the spread the last 18 games. Like, not very good.
And
so, yeah, so not very good at, like, being where the experts kind of think. Oh, man. I think it's going to be – I think this would be a close one. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if USC comes out and plays well, but I think USC is going to win, like, a 24-21-ish kind of game.
So no cover.
No cover, yeah. I'm taking Washington State to cover.
I guess I'll go 28-26 so they don't cover. But I have them winning this game. I did not have them winning either of the last two games.
Yeah.
I'll go 34-31 SC. I'll go Jana Harris with a big pick to turn the tide of the game.
He had a lot of picks in camp, so we got to see him.
Yeah, he's as good of a cover guy as I've been around.
What do you think, Keely?
I don't know.
So none of us are picking USC to cover. They're all like close ones, though.
I hate. This is the portion of the show that I hate doing.
Just
hate
go with the blowout. 45-7.
I hate football scores, too. I can't think of them off the top of my head. Maybe 35-21?
Those aren't football scores. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, they are. They are.
Okay, good.
she doesn't.
Math is hard. I think Mizzou's going to win.
So, okay.
You think,
by two touchdowns?
Well, Texas won by three.
Yeah. Helton's
first loss at home, maybe?
And that Texas team is not very good either.
Is that what it is? He hasn't lost at home?
Hasn't lost at home.
It's true.
So you're predicting his first loss in the Coliseum?
I mean, weekday games for USC coaches are a little iffy.
Send your hate mail to @Keely is my name.
Hey, won the Cal game when Miley Cyrus showed up.
Oh, true. Okay, yeah, but it's Cal. I don't know. We'll see.
I got a couple of rapid fire here.
Good,
Jay Jones asked, Devin Williams is a baller. Why is he not getting more reps? Because they've tried to throw it to him, and he has not caught any passes. So you're going to trust those
older guys.
Which is
important for a receiver to
catch him. I mean, they need to get him a bubble screen and let him try to break a tackle first before they keep throwing deep to him. Bodhi Zafa says, any coaching changes that they could do in season for improvement now?
I mean, you could. They're not going to do anything like that.
I don't think they will. But if you look at what they did in the offseason, you brought in Tim Drevno,
right,
who is a offensive line coach, to be the running backs coach. That is the potential you could do there. They brought in Joe DeForest, I believe is his name, who was the special teams coach at Kansas, or Kansas State, one of those Midwestern
in the middle place,
Big 12 schools. So if you basically have backups at the two areas where there was concerns coming into the year and where there are still concerns now. So if you were to make a change, there are kind of backups already there in place. Now, do you make those changes? I don't think they will. And if you did, if you moved Drevno, then you could potentially move Johnny Nansen to running backs coach, because he's been there before. Clancy's coached the linebackers previously. You could do that. So someone brought this up in our USC one change. Everybody, if you want to guys want to
hashtag USC change. Yeah,
it's the one thing you would change.
Yeah, people send like 10, like one. We're just like one thing you could change.
One thing you would change. If you want to send any of those things, but that was something that someone brought up. It's like, hey, you can move Johnny Nansen over. You can move. I think they said Andy LaRusso. You can move to the linebacker's spot too. So there are kind of the backups there. Will Clay help make that change from what he's done in the past? There's no precedent to say that
he certainly will not, unless there was some, if Lynn Swann said you have to get rid of this guy or something. I think that's the only way that would happen. I don't know.
And the last one I got is Pyroshock says, can we schedule Armed Forces schools for our non-conference? USC doesn't want to perform against Power 5 schools anymore. And you look at the scheduling, I know that Dan Weber has brought this up. He said, why would you schedule anybody now? Well, because the fans want to see those games for one, but you see some schools are still scheduling tough, but other schools don't schedule anyone and it works out in their favor. But then also, You look at it the other way, those schools were in the East and the South, wherein Washington didn't schedule anybody and they went to the playoff. What happened? Oh, well, ESPN's setting out cupcakes in front of the TV screen for them. So, you know, I think there's a different mindset if a West Coast team doesn't schedule anyone.
Yeah, it's part of the culture. Like, we were in Austin last weekend and it was awesome. Like, the fans, we had this happy hour party. We had like 250 people come to this thing. That's what USC fans like. They want to go to Auburn or Arkansas or Texas or Notre Dame, whatever. That's part of what you, as a USC fan, that's what they want, those huge road trips. So those aren't going away. And those are great. Like, even, you know, USC getting beat by Texas, everyone we talked to was having a great time down there. That's the kind of stuff you want to see. So
yeah, they'll complain on Monday or Tuesday when they get back from Austin, but they were having a great time down there.
Someone says USC should schedule Hawaii. I would be in favor for that. if Ryan sponsors it across the
I went to Hawaii.
That was my first game as a Trojan.
I went to Hawaii in 2010 or 2011 when they went, and I was doing radio. So I actually went to, it was Labor Day weekend. I went on like a Tuesday. I didn't leave the room during daylight until Thursday, I think, for a Friday night game, because I was trying to learn all the Polynesian pronunciations that Hawaii had for radio. And
you couldn't have done that on the beach?
And being the first game, I didn't know who was going to be playing for them, so didn't know their depth chart very well. So that was very tough.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I went in January for the Polynesian Bowl, so that's a new one. It's like a new high school, but that's okay. So I'm making sure I cover that one.
Someone wants to know, Max, if you have a like behind-the-scenes funny story or something that people don't know about, a story that you could tell us to put you on the spot.
That might be something I have to scheme on, and you guys have to have me back, and then I'll have to answer. Behind the scenes,
we can link to your YouTube page if you.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I want to come up with an answer if whoever asked that, but nothing comes up initially. I'll have to come back to answer that one.
Okay. Looking at the comments, you got some new subscribers, so that's
sweet.
That's good.
Love it. Yeah. Thanks for checking it out.
Yeah. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Scott Sheffield really wants to know, Max, should he have Mexican or Thai for lunch?
Thai. Thai is my favorite food. I'm serious. That's a great question. Thai is top.
We're going to take you to Thai lunch. So this is fun. First of all, really, thank you, Max Brown, for coming. Obviously, such a great kid, and we've been following him since he was a teenager, and seeing
He's not a kid anymore.
I got you. Yeah.
Wishing him great success, and I loved watching the YouTube page. So make sure you guys check that out. He didn't have to come here and do all this stuff, so it's really cool.
Thanks for having me on.
We love your commentary. Yeah. We appreciate it.
And now that he's out of school, it's funny because we get to, we meet a lot of cool people. And, when you're in high school and then you kind of follow them through and whatever you do after, college and stuff, it's great. But we can't do anything for, if you came here when you were a student, I couldn't, take you to lunch. Now I can take you for time.
Yeah. No violations.
Yeah, we've been violations. Now we can. Now he's, out of school.
Yeah, no, perfect.
Well, that's good. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today's show. We will be back here on Sunday night. Sunday still, even though it's a Friday game, correct, Ryan?
Yeah, Sunday. Yeah, still Sunday. We'll still
Sunday. Okay, Sunday night, wrapping up and analyzing that game on Friday, whether it's a win or a loss, we will be here. But that's going to wrap it up for Shotgun Spratling, Ryan Abraham, and Max Brown. I'm Keely Orr, and we'll see ya in a couple days. See ya in a couple days. See ya in a couple days.